person, and every single black person died. The destruction of the Indians of the Americas was far and away the most massive act of genocide in the history of the world. That is why, as one historian aptly has said, far from the heroic and romantic heraldry that customarily is used to symbolize the European settlement of the Americas, the emblem most congruent with reality would be a pyramid of skulls. Scholarly estimates of the size of the post-Columbian Holocaust have climbed sharply in recent decades. Too often, however, academic discussions of this ghastly event have reduced the devastated indigenous peoples and their cultures to statistical calculations in recondite demographic analyses. It is easy for this to happen. From the very beginning, merely taking the account of so mammoth a cataclysm seemed an impossible task, wrote one Spanish adventurer, who arrived in the New World only 2 decades after Columbus's first landing, and who himself openly reveled in the torrent of native blood. There was neither paper nor time enough to tell all that the conquistadors did to ruin the Indians and rob them and destroy the land. As a result, the very effort to describe the disaster's overwhelming magnitude has tended to obliterate the historical sense of this truly horrific human element. In an apparent effort to counteract this tendency, one writer, Tsvetan Todorov, begins his study of the events of 1492 and immediately thereafter with an epigraph from Diego de Landa's Relación de las Cosas de Yucatán. The captain, Alonso López de Ávila, brother-in-law of the Adelantado Montejo, captured during the war in Bacalan, a young Indian woman of lovely and gracious appearance. She had promised her husband, fearful lest they should kill him in the war, not to have relations with any other man but him, and so no persuasion was sufficient to prevent her from taking her own life to avoid being defiled by another man, and because of this, they had her thrown to the dogs. Todorov then dedicates this book to the memory of a Mayan woman devoured by dogs. It is important to try to hold in mind an image of that woman, and her brothers and sisters, and the innumerable others who suffered similar fates, as one reads Todorov's book, or any other work on this subject, just as it is essential as one reads about the Jewish Holocaust or the horrors of the African slave trade, to keep in mind the treasure of a single life in order to avoid becoming emotionally anesthetized by the sheer force of such overwhelming human evil and destruction. There is, for example, the case of a small Indian boy whose name no one knows today, and whose unmarked skeletal remains are hopelessly intermingled with those of hundreds of anonymous others in a mass grave on the American plains. But a boy who once played on the banks of a quiet creek in eastern Colorado, until the morning in 1864, when the American soldiers came. Then, as one of the cavalrymen later told it, while his compatriots were slaughtering and mutilating the bodies of all the women and all the children they could catch, he spotted the boy trying to flee. There was one little child, probably 3 years old, just big enough to walk through the sand. The Indians had gone ahead, and this little child was behind, following after them. The little fellow was perfectly naked, traveling on the sand. I saw one man get off his horse at a distance of about 75 yards and draw up his rifle and fire. He missed the child. Another man came up and said, "Let me try the son of a bitch. I can hit him." He got down off his horse, kneeled down, and fired at the little child, but he missed him. A third man came up and made a similar remark, and fired, and the little fellow dropped. We must do what we can to recapture and to try to understand, in human terms, what it was that was crushed, what it was that was butchered. It is not enough merely to acknowledge that much was lost. So close to total was the human incineration and carnage in the post-Columbian Americas, however, that of the tens of millions who were killed, few individual lives left sufficient traces for subsequent biographical representation. The first 2 chapters to follow are thus necessarily limited in their concerns to the social and cultural worlds that existed in North and South America before Columbus's fateful voyage in 1492. We shall have to rely on our imaginations to fill in the faces and the lives.